Quick agenda. I'll give a quick overview of what I do and why I'm giving this talk. And I think one of the important things to really talk about with DDoS malware that's people who aren't familiar with it is what hasn't changed with it. Historically, it's not that great. There's a lot of really bad code, a lot of broken attacks. And just talking about how they have advanced is we push more to block their attacks, detect their attacks, that they push back, and then just a lot of stuff where it's been going. And if you have questions, feel free to interrupt during the talk. I shouldn't get too frazzled, so. So I've been in Arbor for a year tomorrow. I've done a couple presentations before. Last presentation was actually on DDoS malware. The other stuff was on different things. I've done a lot of malware clustering stuff. We actually have a poster here at Usenix on Thursday about some malware clustering research we've done. IP reputation. I like math, graph theory, applying graph theory types topics to malware analysis. It's fun. Hard, but fun. And the other important thing is, how do we find all this malware? We built a massive malware analysis system. It's completely automated for the most part that tags, pulls in tags, runs, does static and dynamic analysis against malware. So we can actually, we're currently pulling in 100,000 samples a day. And if we turn on a couple of our other things, we could be close to 200,000 a day. But for the most part, our problem is we don't want to analyze most of it. We don't care about most of it. We don't care about toolbars. We're not an AV company. We mostly want to find anything that can do DDoS and anything that can do DDoS differently than other things have done it. And so we have a bunch of heuristics to bubble the interesting samples up to the top every day. And then we pour through them and reverse engineer them. Really why I'm giving a talk, it's DDoS has become much more in the limelight and much more of a threat over the last year. There was a spam mouse attack earlier this year that totally did not almost break the internet. There have been the Triple Crown attacks against the banks. There's lots of political motivations that we've seen in some of the botnets that we've tracked. There's all the Anon ops. Also seen a bunch of ransom demands of sites posting messages of, hey, we're under a DDoS, they're demanding this much money, or they're not going to stop. And then we've also seen that they are evolving just like we're evolving, and we're detecting things that they do wrong, and then they detect it, we detect it, and then they change. One of our analysts last year gave a blog on one of the pieces of malware. He found a broken attack, and the author posted a comment on the blog saying, thank you for letting me know. I fixed it. It's patched. And so we're like, okay, maybe we're not going to go into so much detail when we talk about some of the broken things we find. Really, for what hasn't changed, they still have mostly volumetric attacks, GET post floods, SYN floods, connection floods, a lot of SYN floods that are actually connection floods that they call SYN floods. There are UDP floods that are both spoofed and non-spoofed. Still have lots of IRC command and control around. And a lot of them use hard-coded user agents that are easily detectable. We see Windows 95 user agents, Windows 98 user agents. And you just don't really expect that to be able to go to most sites today. They still have trouble with the more sophisticated type attacks, like a Solaris or an Army attack, where they think if they just put content length 42, x-a:b, and just send as many of those things as they can, that's a Solaris attack. Same with Army. They're like, oh, if I send a couple of range bytes in the header, then that'll totally exhaust the memory in Apache, and it won't. There's actually, we've seen a lot more .NET malware that can do DDoS, but it's pretty terrible. It's pretty primitive. Doesn't compare to most of the other stuff. Still see lots of Ghost Rat and other the other rat variants where the code's been leaked in some fashion. Most of these guys aren't protocol aware. They open a socket, they send, and then they close the socket. They're not trying to parse how to make sure that they're sending a valid HTTP request. There's malform stuff everywhere. and most of them can't do proper HTTPS. They'll target port 443 and send plain text HTTP over it. And then there's copy and paste like everywhere. We've actually been able to look at a broken attack in one piece of malware that popped up and watch that like proliferate through all the different variants. And you can actually like trace like a lineage of what's descended from what based on some of these broken attacks. And so, you know, now for what has changed, they're getting a lot better at blending in and hiding on your network. So they're actually doing a lot more HTTP command and control now. Most of the time it's plain text. What existed before was plain text, but there's a, so Athena used to be an IRC bot. They just recently released an HTTP version. So now they actually do some obfuscation. I have a better example of this later, but so you can actually see there are three parameters and then they're hex encoding the first parameter and the third parameter. And you know those are actually all end up being base64 encoded. So you can't just see that someone is ordering a GET or a flood attack on someone. Then you also have something like Betabot, which has DDoS in it, but it also has banker capabilities. And according to one RSA blog post that no one that I've talked to has been able to verify, it has password sealing. And it's not typically, it doesn't seem to be used for DDoS much, but it's definitely something we've tried to keep an eye on. And then like also with the Athena, they can actually adjust how often that they phone home. So, you know, instead of these, if you're pinging a site every like 10 seconds, 90 seconds, 5 minutes, they can actually say, hey, only phone home only once an hour. And when you phone home again, they can say, actually next time make it 2 hours. So they're definitely, you know, trying to not be nearly as noisy, which something like an IRC command and control. It's going to be much noisier than this stuff. And they're also getting more intelligent with the HTTP stuff. There's more legitimate requests. One piece of malware I blogged about last month was a new variant of Dirt Jumper. They actually have three user agent strings that they can actually randomize different values in there. So there's nothing static. And then some of them are actually end up being completely legitimate, but some of those values will fall in areas that aren't. It's trying to detect which are good and which are bad or becomes much harder. You know, Athena also has a bunch of legitimate user agents. And there was a piece of malware a year or two ago called Armageddon that introduced this thing where you can actually, it phones home the server and gets a list of all the different headers it's going to use in this attack. So at that point, it's nothing's in the binary, and the only way you can know it's going to be used in an attack is if you're actually monitoring the CNC and you have some way to hit the CNC, get that request back, and then get, you know, figure out what you can actually block against and then push that out. And so this was another recent piece of malware called Paradise that was actually specifically talking about how they borrowed this feature from Armageddon, that they were borrowing what they claimed were the best features from everything. Then Drive also has the ability to, you know, specify post parameters. So they will, you can hit a login form, you can hit a search box, just to try to make this, you know, instead of just chewing up network bandwidth, now you're trying to chew up server CPU by making it perform database queries and, you know, randomizing some of this stuff so nothing can be cached. And so here's an example of like one of the Dirt Jumper Drive, and so this actually cut off the post request, but at the bottom, this is what's sent to any of the bots, is saying, you know, generate 1,000 random characters for this, you know, for login parameter, 1,000 for password, and so it spews this massive, you know, post data to the server, and so we've actually seen it. They've hard coded some of these. So it's, you know, they put like in a cookie or something, or session ID. They randomized a couple of the other parameters where you can, like, whoever was targeting the site actually did a little bit of homework. They figured out how to make the request to get through to actually chew up the CPU and then ordered the attack. And, you know, a lot of the sites will go down under that if you can't detect it. And another one was a colleague, Dennis Schwartz, blogged about Black Rev, where they're actually adding like some of these cookie values in there. So yeah, like, you know, this is You know, how do you know that this cookie isn't legitimate? You know, it's actually very similar to a lot of stuff. This one actually ends up being hard-coded, so we can detect it, but we expect to see more of that in the future. Then there is, you know, this is how Athena builds its HP request. So all the green stuff is dependent on per attack, and then it actually will generate a random number, and if it's higher or lower than a specific value, it decides to include any of the headers that start in blue. And then once it decides to include a header, then it generates another set of random numbers, and it goes down to pick which value it wants to put in that header. So when you have something like that, like trying to detect which combination of this like stuff is going to end up being in any attack, it becomes much more difficult. You can say, hey, if you hit this one, this one, this one, this one, that's not, you know, it's not normal, and we can block that. But the chance, like when you actually calculate how many, the percent of getting that combination, it ends up being very low, and it's much harder to detect. And so here's the example of the Athena phone home, where that's actually what goes back. And the first thing is the hex encoded, and then you actually base64 encode the, like once you unhex it, and that's the string translation table, and then you. Then you actually translate characters in the second parameter, and then base64 decode it, and you get what the actual message is. And the third parameter is a marker that the server uses to send its message back, and it uses the original string translation table. So if you don't actually have the full, you don't have the client response from the server, you don't know what the server is telling the client to do. That one was a huge pain in the butt to reverse. Because I was trying to also emulate one of these bots so I could actually see what the CNCs were ordering. And you know, it took me a good 2 or 3 days to get everything exactly right. So, and then this is some of the stuff from Paradise where you see all the different headers. Like you have accept headers, accept language headers, accept encoding headers, user agents, refers. So this is what's coming back from the server, and they, most of the time they don't change it, but they can change it if they want to. So if they were smart, they could actually say, hey, what are the most current user agents? Only use those. What's the most common? You know, accept encoding, you only use that. What does the rule of browser request look like? Okay, let's form our stuff based on that. For the most part, they don't. So, and then in terms of building better botnets, you know, there's the Triple Crown financial attacks where they implemented a tiered companion control structure where there's a layer that's controlled directly by the actors, then there's a layer of compromise, and there's a layer in between that's also compromised it's like a go-between. And then they can also dynamically update these guys with saying, hey, we don't want you to use the old code we gave you, we want you to use this new code, and we want you to start attacking this. And so it's every time a new attack comes in, you have to say, are they using the same code or not? If they are, great, we can use our existing protections. If they're using new code, we have to figure out what they're using and then update our stuff to update our stuff to make sure we can protect. And then there's the, you know, the spam house DNS amplification, not a botnet per se, but you have lots of open machines that are, you know, easily that you can use in attack, and so you end up being able to just point your stuff at a bunch of different machines and, you know, generate, you know, hundreds of gigabits of traffic with just one simple script and a handful of, you know, machines that you control. And typically in the past, most of this malware didn't actually, they didn't do much on the way of protection. They, no VM, no anti-VM, no anti-sandbox type stuff. They're getting a lot better with that. Like Paradise now stores all of its attack code in external DLL that has to be pulled down and decrypted by the main binary. And we've also seen some of the Dirt Jumper CNCs that are restricting their bots to certain regions, and they were targeting financial institutions in those regions. So it seemed like they were actually trying to only collect a corpus of clients that would be expected to be legitimate by the financial institutions. And so, you know, hey, if you have a bunch of American people connecting to a European bank, that might be a little suspicious, but if it's all European people connecting to the European bank, then it's going to be much harder for them to differentiate who's good, who is an attacker and who's not an attacker. They're also doing a lot more dropping malware just to try to keep some persistence. You know, there's obfuscating a phone, encrypting a phone homes. There's you know, lots more encryption internal to the binaries, which is typically what we saw with bankers like the last couple of years. And, you know, you have the Zeus, you have the Citadel, you have Spy, you have Shylock. All these things have some form of encryption, and most of DDoS malware is plain text. You can just run strings against it and see its code, see exactly what it was going to use for everything. You know, more packers, more obfuscations, lots more junk code. And I just found this one last week. It's a new variant of Drive. They actually, instead of the old standard phone home, they had a two-stage phone home with that there's some other protections and underlying their base 64. They had a bunch of new attacks. Now they actually have this ability to randomize and specify cookies. You know, it's, I'm just like still going through it as we speak. So and you know, they're actually doing a lot of, pass some parameters into a function. It moves some stuff and it calls another function. Moves some stuff, calls another function. Moves some stuff, calls another function. And some of these functions just do nothing. And so it's the adding of that junk code and, you know, being a pain in my butt every time I try to reverse it. So just some of the trends and takeaways. It's, you know, it's, we have seen a lot more DDoS getting into these, into like the larger families. But most of these guys don't use their DDoS capabilities. It's just like the feature that they use as a selling point. We monitor a lot of dark comet CNCs. We've only ever had one of those order a DDoS attack. I've seen some of the Athena CNCs just mostly be booters. Or some of them are just, they'll only order DDoS attacks. Some of them will only try to drop malware. But we also haven't seen any DNS amplification type attacks in any of the malware yet. It's kind of one of those things where we expect it to happen and we're trying to be as prepared as we can for it when it happens. So when it happens, we can say, we have everyone covered and make sure that it's not gonna do what it did to Spam House to anyone else. And then like the, then yeah, we saw the Carbert source code leak, which actually had a DDoS plugin that was based on, I think it was the Zeus plugin. And so that's just gonna create like a ton of variants and just a lot more work for us as we go through our daily work. And we also have lots of, yeah. And so just as I mentioned before, yeah, some of these Athenas are actually dropping mostly Nital, Betabot, Andromeda Zeus. It's pretty much seems like I built up a corpus of bots. I'm going to go to this like hack forums or one of these other little underground forums and say, hey, I have 2,000 bots. I'll sell them to you to put some malware on. But then we'll actually see that same botnet telling us to install like five different pieces of malware. So they're probably not being completely, you know, honest with their customers, which isn't unexpected. We haven't seen anything related to Speedy yet. We haven't really seen much on the internet that does Speedy, but it'll be interesting if we do, because that's, as someone who came from an IPS world, Speedy was a potentially terrifying protocol to dissect and try to write signatures that could block internet traffic based on. And we haven't really seen much in the way of mobile botnets yet. So yeah, just, you know, thanks to Eraser, my manager, Mark Eisenbarth, who's here, and our intern, Alex Bardish, and we'll actually all be with the poster on Thursday as well. So if you have any questions or comments.
Hi, Shiva.
Thank you.
So Jason, yeah. I'm always curious. You spend a lot of time talking about the stuff that sort of stayed the same, that there's a lot of this dumb stuff out there.
Yeah.
You know, how do you gain any confidence that your collection methodology just isn't catching the easy stuff, and the hard stuff you're just not seeing?
That's also like another major concern. It's the heuristics we use to bubble up, or like, are we actually, with all the people we trade samples with, are we actually getting good quality of samples? And we trade samples with the number of the AV companies, which is, it gives us some confidence. And we actually also have, with some other agreements we have around other stuff, we've actually also gotten access to even more malware that, like, basically that's what's pushing us towards 200,000 a day if we wanted it. And, you know, so we're constantly trying to figure out, how do we get rid of the stuff we don't even want to look at? How do you make sure we don't miss the stuff? That's part of, like, why we were looking at some of the, you know, the malware clustering type stuff is, if, you know, not everything has the word DDoS in it. Sometimes they use numeric codes. They're a little bit smarter there. And so it's you have to, like, look for signs like, hey, do they have, like, 5 user agents in there? Interesting. They have, like, all the HTTP language in there? That might be a DDoS bot. And then also, in addition to all the other static tagging mechanisms, or if, you know, it runs in our sandbox and we actually see it make 1,000 HTTP requests in a minute, we, you know, if it actually does the DDoS attack, then we at least know. So.
So when you're working focus on particular families of malware, how do you go about doing that?
It's like, if we wanted to, are you like test like coverage type thing, or test see how many like how samples type stuff? Yeah. So our tagging structure, I guess, it was one of those things. Like, I came from HP, we had nothing like that there. And then I came to Arbor, and it was like, wow, this is like amazing. So we use YARA rules. We actually look at the internet traffic. We can tag based on connection patterns. We can tag based on mutexes, created files. So we actually have a pretty broad scope. We just like did some, we're doing a little bit of AV detection type tagging in combination with other stuff. So it's, and that's, you know, proved pretty reliable. And then if we can actually, well, if you see something that doesn't fit in there, then we will revisit it and say, why didn't it fit, and then update it. And for the most part, it's worked pretty well. Like Athena, we have like a billion samples of. Dirt Jump, we have a billion samples of. And at a certain point, it's like, unless this is new, then we don't really want to run it. We kind of want to keep it just in case, but it's, you know, that's our, tends to be our challenge at this point.
So when you're doing the tagging of the files and the detection, what percentage of the malware in the AV actually run through all of these different things? There's so much more exclusive. Basically, they're going to take up more resources. So let's only run it on 1% or 5%, you know, in this other stuff.
Yeah, so we added capabilities to kind of what we call it grooming our malware queue every day. So we pull in all our samples, we do prioritization based on like some PE properties, you know, we do some YARA detection or some Packer detection, and you know, we try to prioritize it based on some known stuff, and then we just kind of, we say we know we can probably push about 30 to 40,000 through today, so we just lop it off at that, and then the other stuff just kind of goes away. But we do get a lot of stuff. We just like, you know, add toolbars, click potatoes, like non-PE malware that we just, you know, it ends up being more of a headache to deal with that we can also recover later if we really want to.
So I know that you're mostly talking about the evolution of the tools themselves, but you did mention the Triple Crown stuff as well as the DNS application attacks. So I wonder if you just have any thoughts about these sort of big press kind of attacks. Well, maybe Triple Crown to get as much press as
it is. Yeah, like Triple Crowns, having seen like all these PHP-based like really terrible DDoS scripts go across like Pastebin and other sites, you know, you first see it, it's like, oh, they're just using this terrible code. Then you're like, well, they can actually say, run this new code instead. And that was the evolution there of being able to change what their botnet does. And, you know, and if you don't have something that can intercept those scripts or collect those scripts, then you don't know what it's gonna do when you know that hey, big bank A is getting attacked, and they're calling you up saying, hey, why aren't you blocking us? Like, what are they attacking us with? What do we turn on? And so it's like, that's been the big challenge with like the triple crown type stuff. And then we've actually had our intern working on some of the other DNS type stuff. So he's very smart.
I have a question. Do you have any idea how many open DNS resolvers are out there? Is it possible to blacklist?
It's too many to realistically blacklist for us. Like the Open Resolver project has the majority of them collected and listed. We can give that list to customers, but it were like, that was like tens of millions, I thought, at one point. I know they're trying to get it cleaned up. And
there are lots of CVE that offer DNS to the world, so millions.
Yeah.
There's a real problem with that. The open DNS stuff is one-sided problem. But when you go about fixing that, installing DNSSEC, you no longer need an open DNS. You no longer need to get somebody to download a large text record. Just ask for the security records off of DNSSEC. Stupid is the implementation
All right, so let's go ahead and make the speaker, please.